Live from Grand Rapids, Michigan, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Rick Albin, veteran political analyst for WOOD Radio and Television in Grand Rapids, and Mark Brewer, the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. Our program tonight coming to you from the Clear Channel studios of News Radio Wood 1300, one of America's great radio stations in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Again, looking forward to your telephone calls from coast to coast and border to border on America's great radio stations. And, of course, if you're listening to us on News Radio Wood 1300 in Grand Rapids, we're going to put you in the center, in the top of the line, head of the line, because we want to know how the votes of Michiganders are going to play out in November, because every 4 years we learn that Michigan is one of these pivotal states. And not only are we doing this broadcast tonight from a pivotal state, we are doing this from a pivotal region or a pivotal county within that state, and we'll hear more about it as the program unfolds. As you all know, if you're regular listeners to this program, we have spent a lot of time talking about the discussions and the debate and the angst from the Democrats as it relates to what was going to happen to the seating of the Michigan delegation and the Florida delegation. And as we arrive in Michigan and in Grand Rapids, there has been some resolution, some movement on that issue with Barack Obama basically kind of signing off on the deal. And we have the guy that was very integral in putting the deal together, Mark Brewer. Thank you very much. Longtime chairman of the Democratic Party in the great state of Michigan since 1995. Bring us up to date. You have a big smile on your face, which means you're going to Denver, you're going to get a seat, and you're going with your entire delegation.
That's right, Bruce. First of all, thank you for having me tonight. It's great to be here with Rick Albin. Yes, Senator Obama promised last spring that this would all be resolved with our delegation being seated in full. And now he has sent a letter to the National Convention Credentials Committee, which will take the official action between now and the convention to ensure that our delegates are seated in full. So we're very happy with that. We're going to have a full voice in Denver. And it also shows, frankly, that you can defy the system and say that the system is broken and engage in a little rebellion and still live to talk about it and fight another day.
Will anyone who was responsible for that get into any political trouble because of all the angst and all of the confusion that took place for the last year plus?
I don't see any of that here in Michigan. We're very much focused at this point on going forward and making sure that Barack Obama carries Michigan. We've got a lot of down ballot races as well. And we put it all behind us, and that was important, and that was done because Senator Obama made this pledge to restore our vote.
This afternoon, I hopped in the car and for about an hour headed over to Lansing, the state capital, and I understand that I was just about 18 hours ahead of Barack Obama. He'll be there tomorrow. He will probably, I will predict, he'll draw a bigger crowd than I did at Jimmy John's this afternoon.
Well, it's hard to say, although we know everywhere he goes, he draws big crowds. Those tickets went away in just a matter of a few hours, as they do most places he goes. You know, he had a big crowd when he was here in Grand Rapids as well. I want to talk, if I could, Bruce, for just a moment about what Mark was talking about. And I must point out that Mark has said from the get-go that all of those Democratic delegates would be seated. And Mark and I were both in Washington for the Democratic Rules Committee meeting at the end of May. And if you watch that on television, you didn't see the entire story, because while there was plenty of argument and there were plenty of people that were unhappy, there was also a real discussion about how to include people. So when Mark talks about a state like Michigan with some very big names saying we want to break the status quo and the stranglehold that some states hold on the primary process, yes, there was some fallout there. Yes, there were some hard feelings, but the National Association of Secretaries of State met here in Grand Rapids last week. I had a chance to address them. And on their top of their list for their agenda were their recommendations for changing that primary process. If it gets changed in the next 4 years, people all over this country will have to look to Florida and Michigan and say that they were the catalyst, or at least part of the catalyst, for that changing.
Mark, why is Michigan every 4 years a swing state? What is tell us about the geography of the state. It obviously is very close, A lot of money has been spent and will be spent here. Tell us more about it.
Well, we've always been a real battleground state. This was a strong Republican state up until World War II. And then with the emergence of the labor movement, a great governor named Soapy Williams, a Democratic governor in the 1950s, we've managed to turn the state into a far more competitive situation. The Detroit area tends to be heavily Democratic. There are some swing counties there. This part of the state tends to be more Republican, but even that's changing. The city of Grand Rapids, in which we're sitting tonight, is now a Democratic city by a slight margin. We have Democrats on the city council here and Democrats in the state legislature. So that's the history. A very strong Republican state for a century. I mean, the Republican Party was founded here in Michigan, but became much more competitive and a much more balanced state after World War II with the emergence, frankly, of the labor movement.
Rick, what would you add to that history?
Well, I look at it in a little shorter term. Mark is a good student of this, but no Republican has won this state since 1988. No Democrat has gone to the White House without winning this state. You have to really go back into the early 50s. Now, there is one exception, and that's when Jimmy Carter lost Michigan but won the White House, and that was by virtue of the fact that he was running against Gerald Ford in 1976. I think, to get a real barometer, no Democrat has won since 1952-ish, if you leave out the 1976 election. So when you say for Democrats, you must win Michigan to win the White House, that is a truism. And this year, when you look at Michigan, and I'm sitting here as all good political geeks do with my little electoral map in front of me, there's no way that I can put this together, and you make a lot of assumptions and guesses, but if Michigan turns red or blue, it will have a significant impact on what happens in this election. Consider that if it turns blue, that once again, Democrats have to win to go. If it turns red, that's a 34 electoral vote swing from what it's been in 20 years.
Does Michigan have coattails in surrounding states? I mean, Michigan is likely to go either red or blue. What does that say about Wisconsin? What does it say about Minnesota? Any connective tissue there, Mark?
I think if you can appeal to the type of voter that you have to appeal to win Michigan, then you do have appeal in Wisconsin and in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri, the other states that are like us in the Midwest.
What's the type?
I think the type is a lot of working folks who work for a living. A lot of them are union members, but not necessarily so. Those states also have significant urban areas, significant African-American vote, particularly in those urban areas. So if you look at
that. A lot of agriculture?
Agriculture as well. I mean, really diverse economies, but these are the industrial states still of this country that really move the manufacturing economy and suffered enormously under George Bush over the last 8 years. So that's what they have in common. So if you can appeal to a Michigan voter and win Michigan, you can win all those other states as well.
And again, what is synonymous with this discussion every 4 years about Michigan, the economy is always the top issue here.
Well, this year more than ever, we've lost hundreds of thousands of jobs, manufacturing jobs, and many of them from the automotive industry over the past dozen years, 10 years at least. And when you look at the rest of the country and people are starting to feel the pain of an economy that's on the downside in Michigan, we've known that pain for nearly a decade. So it will, in my reporter's opinion, be the economy, the economy, the economy. There are other issues out there.
I want to talk more about that and also whether or not the addition of a well-known Michigan political name to the Republican ticket might, what an impact that might have come November. 1-800-723-8289, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border, tonight live from Grand Rapids, Michigan. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Introducing the future. The all-new 2009 Lincoln MKS. Visit Pfeiffer Lincoln Mercury or Plainfield Lincoln Mercury and test drive the technologically breathtaking Lincoln MKS. Explore it now at Lincoln.com. Then test drive the MKS at Pfeiffer Lincoln Mercury, 28th and Breton, or Plainfield Lincoln Mercury on North Plainfield.
Your sizzling Ruth's Chris steaks arrive as you look into the eyes of your date, but you can't hold back.
All of this, the appetizers, the entrees, the dessert, I'm only paying $89 for all of it.
Completely impressed, she asks,
do you know the owner?
And you simply tell the truth.
I just saw the ad that said I could buy a dinner for two at Ruth's Chris for $89.
I love a man with a sense of humor,
she says, and you realize she didn't believe a word. Ruth's Chris Summer Celebration for Two, a three-course meal for two people for just $89, only at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, available for a limited time.
And now for the bonus round. If second place is the first loser, who came in last?
Billy.
Correct. Nothing rhymes with orange. What color are my boxers?
Duh, they're blue.
Correct. What's the affordable way to rent DVDs?
Netflix, with plans from only $4.99 a month.
Correct! Netflix! Choose your movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Plans now from only $4.99 a month and never a late fee. Start your free trial today. Netflix, it's that easy.
I'm Ken Yonker, and I approve this message.
Tuesday, voters in Kentwood, Cascade, Caledonia, and Gaines can vote for the mature, conservative, pro-life leadership we need in Lansing. Republican Ken Yonker. Lansing is a mess, but Ken Yonker has the experience to serve us starting day one. The Grand Rapids Press agrees and says Ken Yonker is most capable of delivering the cooperative and creative leadership needed in Lansing. Tuesday, August 5, don't throw away your votes on politics as usual. Vote Ken Yonker.
Paid for by supporters of Ken Yonker.
From Laguna Beach, California to Lansing, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Let's take a call. Let's go to Tom listening to us on WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead, Tom.
Bruce, how are you doing? I'm a big fan of the show.
Very good. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to talk about the drilling issue. I thought it was striking that on Friday, you know, you hear that Barack Obama has now really switched his position when midweek he was really railing against the drilling issue. It would really be devastating for the economy, for the environment, rather. And now just to flip that strikingly on Friday tells me that their internal polling showed them that this was really an issue that could have really hurt him in the general election.
Let's get Mark's response to that issue and also about Obama's you know, perceived flip on that issue.
Well, I think as Senator Obama said, he sees the policy debate moving that direction. There's probably going to be some kind of compromise, and I think he was sending a signal that that kind of compromise would be acceptable to him. This is going to be talked about tomorrow in Lansing. He's going to give a very comprehensive speech on his energy policies. There's a lot to it far beyond the drilling issue. And really, this drilling idea is not going to give us any relief in the short term. But again, I think the senator was sending a signal that if a compromise comes up and it moves in that direction, that's something he'd be willing to sign off on.
At a time when again, this is one of these issues, at least, you know, for the last probably 20 years, every 4 years, there's been an issue of, you know, of the economy and also oil and how we're going to really wean ourselves away from dependence on foreign oil. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of going through the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library. It's a wonderful presidential library. I urge everyone to come and visit it. But again, going back to that 1976 campaign, it was talking about, you know, we're going to wean ourselves away from energy, you know, we're going to be energy independent. And that never seems to happen. Why? Why doesn't it happen? Well, and doesn't a lot of it come back to the economic issues that drive the state of Michigan, frankly? Automobiles. We love automobiles.
They do. And I think it's important. We're going to hear this from Senator Obama tomorrow, that as we get into alternative energy, which we must, and alternative forms of energizing our automobiles, that those automobiles be made in America and particularly in Michigan. I mean, we've got some great products coming down the road. GM's going to have an electric plug-in vehicle in a couple of years. That's what we would like to hear in Michigan. You know, we're fine with moving into higher mileage vehicles, alternative energy vehicles, but we want to make sure the jobs stay here. And I think in answer to your question, though, Bruce, I mean, we have talked about this for decades, but there hasn't been the political will to make it happen. in the meantime, our dependence on foreign oil has just grown and grown and grown. And frankly, it's become a national security issue, I think, at this point.
It goes beyond that. In early 1970, Richard Nixon had a plan to reduce our dependence on foreign oil by 20% by 1980. Something called Watergate came along, and that plan went by the wayside, but it has been out there for a long time. And to your point, Mark, GM has already had an electric car. They already had an electric plug-in. They had it in the mid-90s and were distributing them in California, and they don't exist anymore. So there's a whole lot more to that discussion than just what's happening in this election cycle.
No, but what I'm also, when I go back to, you know, looking at certainly the way that Al Gore has become this messiah on issues related, to the environment, the reality is, if you look at the explosion of SUVs in this country as a cultural phenomenon, as well as what it did to the business climate, I mean, that happened on the Clinton-Gore watch. I mean, no one in the Democratic administration was standing up and saying, wait a minute, time out. Don't buy these big gas-guzzling cars, because what would have happened to them politically had they done that? Right now we can look back, Mark, and I think we would agree that would have been a tremendous profile in courage. But again, it didn't happen.
Right. Well, that's what
it didn't happen because of politics in this state.
Right. That's what consumers wanted. They wanted to buy those big vehicles. Oil is much, much cheaper.
But Jimmy Carter told us to put a sweater on. He was a dumb. But wasn't that perceived to when any candidate, but in this particular case, when a Democratic president told people to put their sweater on, that was perceived as weakness. And isn't that one of the reasons perhaps why Clinton Gore didn't have the gonads to say what probably should have been said in 92 and 93?
Well, I think even back then, though, they were pushing very strongly for alternative forms of energy. And several things have come together here now over the last several years. We've got the global warming, frankly, I think consensus. We obviously got these high energy prices. We've got states like Michigan looking for ways that we can rebuild our manufacturing economy. We've got ethanol production ramping up in this state. We're a great place to build these cars of the future. So I think you're seeing the confluence of several trends that I hope means we are moving finally toward an alternative to foreign oil.
Let's go to David listening to us on News Radio 1300, WOOD. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. One of the things, first, Rick would know who I am because I'm running actually for a local seat here in the Kentwood General Cascade Caledonia Gaines area, and I, as far as I know, I'm the only candidate that put that on there on their literature pertaining to drilling. It's long overdue. 35 years of no refineries open, no drilling, and mind you, I have Middle Eastern background, and I'm, as a Christian, I'm appalled that we're our complete dependence on foreign oil. It's absolutely appalling. We should have been drilling 25, 30 years ago.
Are there other political considerations in this state that tie to this national issue in your view, Rick?
Oh, yeah. I think that when you talk about what's going to happen in Michigan in terms of this election, I think that you talked about it, I think, Mark, as being a national security issue when you talk about use of energy. But I think energy ties into the larger economic picture. And once again, you're going to have to come up with a plan as a candidate. I don't care which candidate it is. You're going to have to come up with some kind of plan that makes sense to people in this state who, again, several hundred thousand of them don't have jobs or don't have the kind of jobs that they did 10 years ago, with the highest unemployment in the nation right here in the state and with people eking out an existence at a much lower level than they were. This is all about the economy. And I think here that alternative energy aside, I think energy is only a small part of the larger economic picture. And it's going to have to be answered.
Earlier this year, by the way, we should mention that we invited the chairman of the Republican Party in the state of Michigan and the leader of the John McCain campaign in the state. Neither was available to join us this evening, so we are playing with a couple of media people trying to be as balanced as we possibly can. But Mark Brewer, we thank you very much representing the state Democratic Party for being with us. But earlier in the year, during the Republican primary, there was a difference between John McCain, who went to the Detroit Economic Club and gave a speech which was viewed as pessimistic about the future of the economy in the state. And then Mitt Romney came around and said, wait a minute, those jobs are not going to be lost. Basically, McCain saying that, you know, some of these big jobs that had been synonymous with the state were never coming back. And at least the the instant analysis after the primary when Mitt Romney won was that he was more optimistic, and that was music to the ears of Republican primary voters. So my question to you is, what does your gut tell you? Are those jobs of the 80s and 90s, and even earlier than that, are they coming back to this state?
Well, as an observer, I would say no, because the economy has shifted in so many ways that the jobs of the future are not going to be, as some people refer to it, as kerchunk manufacturing. They're going to be high-tech jobs. They're going to be more specialized jobs. And we've heard from both parties, frankly, that we'll have to have a better trained workforce. And there are some people who have been working in that vein, and there has been some bipartisan support in that. But when you go back to that primary, it was more than just that, as you well know, because you bring in a Romney, which has a long history with a big name in this state, and you bring in a John McCain, and you still have some Republican stalwarts smarting from the fact that he beat George Bush here in 2000. There were a lot of things at play, but that comment that was repeated again here in Grand Rapids did get a lot of play. I don't want to belabor this. I got to mention this real quick. Barack Obama also came to the Economic Club, and he started talking about CAFE standards. This goes way back. This goes back well before the primary, and that didn't get the best reviews either, as I recall. I mean,
well, but Rick, I think they all.
He bragged about it. Right. He bragged about that he went to Detroit and said what they didn't want to hear.
Well, but the difference is, I think, and you're going to hear this from Senator Obama tomorrow, is that a comprehensive energy plan that I think does promise good-paying jobs in Michigan, in alternative fuels, in high-tech manufacturing. He's got a proposal also to impose a windfall profits tax on the oil companies and use that money to help alleviate some of the stress people are encountering now with high gas prices. So I think what you've got to have, and what I think Obama presents as opposed to McCain, is what are we going to do differently? What are we going to do better to try to restore the health of the economy?
We mentioned Romney. When I went to Lansing today, right across the street from the state capitol, you can't miss it. It's the George Romney State Office Building. He was the two-term governor of this state, ran for president in 1968. His son, I think, still wants to be president. If Romney ended up on the ticket, and he allegedly is on a shortlist, even though there's not a close relationship between Romney and McCain, how much would that help in the state of Michigan?
According to a poll that we did in May, it suggested that on a head-to-head matchup, and those polls, by the way, still within the margin of error, in May they showed McCain a little ahead, in July they showed Obama a little bit ahead, but in May when we added two names, when we added Mitt Romney to the Republican ticket, McCain got a considerable surge. When you added Hillary Clinton to the Democratic ticket, Obama got a considerable surge. But I think the Romney name, and Mark may disagree, but I think the Romney name is still very forceful here in this state. But the question is, what does a vice presidential candidate ever really bring to you? And he also has ties to Massachusetts, which I wouldn't suspect is going to help McCain there very much. So I don't know. But I think, yes, in Michigan, the Romney name helps.
I think it does. But I think Mitt Romney's virtues have been greatly exaggerated. He is not his father. When he was in the private sector, a good part of his business was buying companies, taking them apart, and outsourcing jobs. His company also helped people set up offshore tax shelters. This is a part of his record that is not known here in Michigan, and I think will play very badly if he ends up on
the ticket.
Sounds
like you're getting to ready to make it known in some television spots.
We will.
Sounds like he's gone over some of the scripts, I think. 1-800-723-8289, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night on America's great radio stations and also on XM Radio, POTUS 130. And we're going to take more calls when we roll on from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Kids MP3 player. That's right, I can talk. You ever check out what your kids listening to? I mean, blogs and podcasts and stuff like that. People are talking about everything you can imagine out there, and a lot of times there's drugs involved. I heard this one cat say weed makes you smarter because it makes your brain bigger. Now, you don't want your kid listening to fools like that. Come on now. I'm just saying that maybe talk to your kid and check out what he's loading up. Let him know you care, and maybe he'll think twice about drugs.
Listening, the anti-drug. Learn more at theantidrug.com.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Out of all the things I've done in my life, and the drugs I've tried, meth was the one I thought would put me in my grave. And it would have, if it were not for my family, who cared enough to bring me back to life. Maybe you can help someone get their life back.
For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by ONDCP. Creative furnished by Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
AutoZone. With today's high gas prices, chances are that you're looking for a great deal. So, get in the zone. For a limited time at AutoZone, get 5 quarts of Castrol GTX conventional motor oil and an STP oil filter for a low $14.99. That's right, just $14.99. Or get 5 quarts of Castrol Syntech motor oil and a Fram ToughGuard oil filter for just $26.99. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. So get to AutoZone today.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
This is News Radio 1300 WOOD.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, dead at age 89, the renowned Russian writer falling victim to a stroke.
The author of numerous books exposed the world to life in the Soviet gulag, the Soviet labor camp system, which would earn Solzhenitsyn a Nobel Prize in Literature in 1970 and prompted the Soviet government to exile him in 1974.
Fox News Radio's Marge Tashina. We're learning more about the probe into Army Dr. Bruce Ivins and the 2001 anthrax attacks.
This government scientist has talked with the Associated Press and revealed that investigators started with DNA from some of the anthrax victims, then matched specific DNA patterns to anthrax cultures that Bruce Ivins, who was working as an Army scientist, was responsible for in the lab and where he was working.
Fox's Laura Engel. Ivins killed himself after finding out a federal indictment on murder charges was imminent. And tropical storm warnings in effect for part of the Louisiana coast. Tropical storm Edward churning in the Gulf of Mexico. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Sky's becoming partly cloudy this evening. Temperatures by 11 o'clock near 70. Increasing clouds later tonight with lows right around 64. And Monday will bring in a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be a warm and increasingly humid day with variably cloudy skies. Expect highs near 88.
I'm Storm Team Meteorologist Matt Kirkwood for West Michigan's official weather station, News Radio Wood 1300.
From New London, New Hampshire to Niles, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We'll be back to calls in just a moment. Joining us this evening is Rick Albin. He is a veteran political reporter for WOOD television and also does a lot of work for Wood Radio as well, and has been a fixture in political coverage in this area since 1995. Took some time out to get sort of inside the system, working for some Republicans on Capitol Hill, but then came back and decided to throw himself back into the journalism community, and he's one of the most respected journalists in the great state of Michigan. And you've been on both sides, so which do you enjoy best, Rick? As have I. It's a lot easier asking questions than answering them.
Well, you know, my role when I was not doing what I'm doing now was really as a matter of policy analysis and advising, and I enjoy that a lot. I've never particularly enjoyed the real mix of the politics that Mark gets to do. This is, he's got the scars to prove it, and as do most folks who have been in that business. But I really did like the policy work. I was in Washington when No Child Left Behind was being introduced. I'm one of the half a dozen people that got halfway through reading the thing. And there are any number of things that I enjoyed about that. But I was also there September 11th. And as you can relate, Bruce, there I was for the first time in my life without a microphone or a camera, and the biggest story of my life was unfolding in front of my eyes. And that was really, I think, the thing that probably sent me back into this. And I guess, to be quite honest, I've got the best job in the United States, and I know you feel the same way, but I get to focus on politics full-time. I've worked with people like Saul Anousis and Mark Brewer for all of this period of time, have good relationships, we have good access to the candidates, and we've interviewed every presidential candidate for the last several cycles and every president since Gerald Ford.
And also one of the few television stations in the state that really has a full-time political reporter. And again, obviously, if you're listening to us on Wood Radio in Grand Rapids, you know that the program follows Meet the Press, so you've got a great time slot every Sunday for the television version of what you do. And again, nice to have you with us, and again, thank you for your recent visits to Beyond the Beltway as well. Also joining us this evening is Mark Brewer. He is president of the Michigan Democratic Party. He is also the president of the Association of State Democratic Chairs. He's held that position since June of 2003. That makes him automatically, I guess not automatically, but you were a vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Started doing some internship work back in 1977 with David Bonnier. And you went to Harvard and Stanford Law School, and you headed the delegations for this state in 96 and 2000. You can have the delegation this time as well?
Yes, I am. We've got our governor's our honorary chair, but I'm handling the day-to-day logistics of getting everybody there and taken care of.
Very good. And again, Michigan now a state with a Democratic governor and two Democratic U.S. senators. And again, Mark Brewer, we thank you very much for joining us tonight. Again, for those of you who just tuned in, the state Republican Party chair and the chairman of the John McCain campaign, neither were available to join us for our broadcast tonight. Let's go to Charles, listening to us in New York City on POTUS 130. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. About Michigan, I wanted to say that if you look at the opinion polls in Michigan dating all the way back to June 9th, and if you look at each set of poll figures as a support range rather than an individual number by factoring in the margin of error, the overlap on among all those polls are in agreement that Obama's between 45 and 48, and McCain is between 40 and 43. Now, there's a big caveat to that. Yeah, it looks like Obama is holding a narrow lead, and he's held it consistently for about 2 months. But the Detroit News, I'm sure some of you folks are probably familiar with this, Detroit News came out with a four-way poll that included Barr and Nader, which showed it absolutely a dead heat between McCain and Obama. It was a two-point spread, but with a margin of error plus or minus four, it was meaningless. It was a tie. So I guess I have two questions. First of all, are you guys noticing any activity on the part of Nader in that state that might explain why Obama's weaker in the four ways than the two way?
Let's let Mark respond to that, because this was a state where Nader did well 4 years ago.
Well, actually, he did well in 2000 and did very poorly in 2004. The Republicans actually put him on the ballot here in 2004 in an attempt to sabotage the Democratic ticket. There has been virtually no Nader activity here. And also, too, this recent Detroit News poll, if you take a look underneath it, significant undersampling of African-American voters, I think by as much as 50%. Had that been correctly done, I think you would have seen an Obama lead in the range of 4 to 5%, which is consistent with the other polls.
Go ahead, Rick.
We've been using the same pollster ever since I've been here, and no pollster is infallible, but the folks that do our polling have consistently showed that it is a really close race. As I said earlier, McCain was in the lead by 2 points. I think the last one showed Obama in the lead by 4 points, all within the margin of error, and those numbers have traditionally borne out to be true, and I think the sampling of 600 is generally regarded as relatively good scientific evidence.
Did you have a second question, Charles?
Yeah, will Nader be on the ballot in Michigan this year? Is he attempting to do so? What's the deadline?
He is attempting to do so. He missed the deadline to get on the ballot as an independent. That was in the middle of July. He is trying to get on the ballot through one of the other parties that have qualified for the ballot, so it remains to be seen whether he'll be on the ballot.
Given the angst that took place because of the debate over the seating of the Michigan delegation, what is the level of intensity in this state of Hillary Clinton supporters who are either still upset and they just will not forgive Barack Obama for what they view as sort of wresting the nomination and perhaps the presidency from Hillary Clinton?
I think those supporters have come around. If you look at these polls, and I think Rick can probably confirm this, but if he disagrees, I'm sure he'll say it. If you look at all these polls, consistently there's a huge gender gap in favor of Barack Obama. That's just one indication to me that Democratic supporters, predominantly women, of Hillary Clinton have come home because they realize they've got a very stark choice in the fall. More of the same with John McCain, or change in direction.
And what about blue-collar voters?
I think that's where the fight's going to be. One of the issues that we've seen here is because of the primary debate and the boycott, Barack Obama wasn't in the state for nearly a year, from last July until May. So people in Michigan are just starting to get to know him, and I think as they get to know him, those numbers will move up. We've got plenty of campaigning to do.
Rick, in your opinion, is there any difference between the blue-collar voter who lives in Ohio and Pennsylvania and the blue-collar voter that lives in Michigan insofar as an intensity that might be there that may not be terribly supportive of Barack Obama?
I think there is a difference, and that difference, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but it goes back to what blue-collar workers have been going through in this state for nearly a decade. and that is that their blue-collar jobs have gone away. And I think that in Ohio and in Pennsylvania, while I know they've certainly had problems, they have not been as severe as they are here. And I think that the folks in this state are angry on a number of levels. I won't get into all of the state issues that we've dealt with in the past 18 months, but there is a lot of anger out there. And I would agree with Mark to a large degree that most of the Hillary Clinton angst may have gone away. Anecdotally, you're going to find people who are still angry about that. But there are people out there, and again, referring back to that poll, when we ask them who they blame Governor Jennifer Granholm and President George Bush almost equally in that poll for the economic problems in the state. So that tells me that there are people in a very evenly divided and a very highly polarized electorate.
In any state where you have a big city and you have the number two city, that is, although you say Grand Rapids has a Democratic, you know, leadership right now, it's still from the sort of the Republican area of the state. How much anti-Detroit attitude exists in this state? Is there a hate Detroit turnout the vote effort that's there, whether it's done officially or not?
There is always an east-west divide. It has grown and it has gotten smaller during the time I've been here, and it moves back and forth.
And is it racial? Let's be candid here.
I don't know. I don't know that I'm qualified to answer that, but I will tell you this. There is a significant amount of concern about the amount of resources that go into Detroit. When you talk about revenue sharing, Detroit takes up about 50% of all revenue sharing in the entire state. There are people who are unhappy about that, and there is something else. There is the current problem with Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick in that area, and I know Mark disagrees with me on this. I don't know what effect that has on the vote. Again, as an observer, I would think that that would be of some concern. We have discussed it in the past. You believe it will not be. But there is a – I don't think
– Tell us about the problems with the mayor of Detroit.
I don't know where to begin. Only to tell you –
It's a short show. We've only got an hour and a half left.
Only to tell you that the mayor has come under question for some issues with text messages in a trial that took place.
With his assistant of a sexual nature. I mean, it's a sex scandal involving the mayor of Detroit.
It is, but it's more than that. I mean, it could – I think, develop into a certain, again, you go back and look at these kind of things. Is it the issue or is it the confidence that gets eroded from those kind of issues? I think that's the problem. But I don't know what impact that has, but when you go back, you're not going to see a commercial that says, go for it, vote for candidate X because he'll do something bad to Detroit. That's not the way that works.
What is the racial concerns that exist in this state as a political leader of the Democratic Party? Are they there, and what level are they important in this campaign?
Well, they're certainly there. This is the most racially segregated state in the country, and you see that all over the state. You see that all over the state. I think it tends to be played out more in statewide elections where you've got control of the legislature, control of the state house up for grabs. That's where it plays out a little bit more.
Tax dollars.
It's gotten better over the years, but it's still there, and there is a racial component to it. There's absolutely no question about it. I think in presidential years and presidential elections and those kinds of things, there's less of that. I mean, this election this fall is not going to be about Grand Rapids versus Detroit. It's going to be about the direction of the country. Which of these two candidates is going to help Michigan more deal with its economic problems? So I think there's much less of this racial animus and racial aspect to the vote when you're talking about a presidential election.
Is there an issue of how much of Barack Obama's time has been spent campaigning in Detroit, or doesn't he think he has to spend a lot of time there? That's the question. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. We've got callers on the line. We're going to bring them into our conversation. If you just tuned in, we're doing the show tonight live from Clear Channel Radio in Grand Rapids, Michigan. News Radio, Wood 1300, one of America's great radio stations. Back with your calls from Grand Rapids.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit SCORE.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
McCain.
If we withdraw from Iraq, Al-Qaeda in Iraq will survive.
Obama.
I think they expect the president to fight for them.
We cover the stretch run for the Oval Office. WOOD.
Hey, this is Gary Allen. Check my page out at woodradio.com. Got lots of cool stuff up there, including the latest effort from Jib Jab. It's called Time for Some Campaigning. You can check that out. Also, take a look at the lookalikes. Click that link. I know my granddaughter loved it, but check it out for yourself. Also, you'll be able to test your food knowledge, and we'll tell you about a place you can go and play with heavy equipment. That's on there as well. All at woodradio.com. Keyword Gary. Join Steve Kelly and me mornings on West Michigan's Morning News.
Hey there, fellow entrepreneurs. Rick Weiss here. And on behalf of Doug, Christy, and myself, we invite you to visit us at Flowerland, where we keep gardening and yardening all year long. We'll give you a good, swift kick in the plants with flowers, landscape plants, garden furniture, accessories, and solutions for your yard, landscape, and home. And check out our weekly specials at myflowerland.com and click on the link to thankyouverymulch.com to see what's on my mind for well-rooted advice. Flowerland's conveniently located with three locations surrounding the Grand Rapids area, and with gas prices the way they are, we'll help you make your home and outdoor living space a refuge to enjoy. We're rooting for you and hope you'll stop by soon to say hi. At Flowerland, we don't throw in the trowel just because spring is over, and we know you don't either. Check out those weekly specials at myflowerland.com and link to thankyouverymulch.com for a hedgeucation. Flowerland, a local first store, home and garden showplace located in Kentwood, Comstock Park, and in Wyoming.
Your more informed morning starts here.
More fallout from record losses at GM, and the Tigers open a series with the Rays.
Start your morning with West Michigan's Morning News, tomorrow morning at 5 on News Radio 1300 WOOD.
From Fresno, California to Tyler, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Speaking of Texas, let's head to Austin, where Joseph is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Hey, Bruce. Enjoy your program.
Thank you very much. Yep. I hope you stay tuned for Kenny Raymeyer after our show every Sunday night.
Sure will.
He's one of the best in the business. Go ahead.
Yeah, back to the energy crisis. I think there's an aspect to it that nobody is touching on. I've read a couple of articles in the paper, but you know the unemployment data for July, it showed 75,000 jobs lost in the private sector, and of course we can think of the airlines and the General Motors and all these things. However, at the same time that the private sector was getting clobbered, there were 25,000 jobs added in the government sector. So the total was about a 50,000 job loss. In other words, I think one reason why the Democrats don't mind this energy crisis is it's destroying the private sector, which has to make a profit, and it's growing the government sector.
Joseph, Mark is shaking it. You can't hear it or see it in Austin, but he's shaking his head. So let's let him respond to what you your assessment.
Well, that's just one of the most illogical statements I've ever heard. There's absolutely no relationship there in terms of cause and effect. Democrats want the private sector in this country to thrive. Matter of fact, if I recall, under President Clinton, we had one of the best economies, the private sector thriving we've had in a long, long time, something that Bush has managed to destroy in the last 8 years. No, we very much want the private sector to thrive because that's where the people get the bulk of the jobs.
Well, let me respond to that. Who is it that's criticizing the oil companies for making a profit? Who is it? It was the Democrat Party that's talking about nationalizing the oil companies. If we did a lot of drilling, it would increase employment in the private sector. It would bring money, a lot of money to the private sector. And look at the post office, the U.S. post office. 95% of the mail they deliver is junk mail. On the internet, that is called spam. Why is it that there's been no pain whatsoever in the U.S. post office? They work 6 days a week, and they work later now. I mean, it seems to me that we could do a 50% reduction on the U.S. post office, and that would save a lot of energy.
Joe, let me ask you a question, because I know you recognize your voice. You call the program from time to time. What is the sense for the people that you run into on a daily basis about Barack Obama and John McCain in the capital city of Texas?
Well, of course, Austin is not typical of Texas.
Right.
I would say I see a lot of Obama yard signs, even in the affluent neighborhoods. I don't see, I haven't seen any John McCain yard signs. I would say, in general, Texans are kind of lukewarm toward McCain. And
what is the? Thanks very much for your assessment. What temperature would you put on the McCain support in this state, Rick? We'll ask you to sort of analyze, look at the Republican options in the state.
Well, I think the numbers when you take a look at where the state was, obviously Mitt Romney won here in the primary, and there was a lot of attention paid to that primary, by the way, because as Mark pointed out, Democrats didn't participate fully in that primary because of the rules. And I think that McCain has a couple of things going for him that's helping to raise that temperature a little bit. One of them is he has gotten pretty good organization going here, has some pretty powerful folks within the party structure that were with him from the beginning. And so I think that moves it along. But remember, we're just in the first part of August, and other than Mark and you and I, not a whole lot of folks are completely engaged in this yet. So I think to get a real handle on how people are going to view McCain in Michigan is going to be something that will play out. There are people that will say, but he won here in 2000. Now, Mark is not going to say anything on this, but there are people who believe that a lot of Mark's buddies helped him win here in 2000 because the Republicans and Democrats did not have a primary on the same day. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you had a caucus. Democrats had a caucus. Republicans had a primary. And there were certain factors in the Democratic Party, I'm sure not Mark Brewer, but there were certain factors who were encouraging people to vote for John McCain instead of George W. Bush, because then Governor Engler was going to build a firewall. So there are all of these different factors out there, but it's just like the Hillary Clinton factor, I think. When it all comes down to roost and we get in the middle of October, those people who tend to lean towards the Republican base are going to start coming home to roost, as will those perhaps Clinton supporters will start to move closer to Barack Obama.
One other voting block that you have in Michigan, and it at least in the analysis of the state that I've heard over the last several years, that is not prevalent in other states, and that is you have a very large Arab American population. What can you tell us about their politics and how they sift through the issues in this race, Mark?
About 4 to 5% of the population in Michigan is from various Arab countries, Muslim as well, not just from the Arab countries.
All around Detroit and Flint are the
not necessarily, but that's where the bulk of the population is. And that population, like many ethnic immigrant communities, can be heavily influenced by events overseas, what's going on in the home country as well. Went very heavily for George Bush in 2000 and went heavily Democratic in 2004. It's very much a population that I think is up for grabs between the two parties.
Weren't they also very close to former Senator Spencer Abraham?
There was
key to his election.
Helpful to him as well, certainly.
Rick? Also very active. The pretty high propensity voters, they had a big debate and a big convention in 2004. It was President Bush was here to speak to them in 2003, if I'm not mistaken. So they are politically active.
Any idea where they're leaning now? Of any internal polls as to where they might be going?
Largest concentration would be in the Dearborn area for just total numbers. And so I don't think we see in the polling that we do any oversampling of that. So I don't think I would have any numerics to put them.
Okay. Rick Albin is a veteran political reporter for WOOD, television and radio here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Mark Brewer, he is the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. He's going to be heading their delegation coming up to Denver. And our phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. We're taking America's political pulse on America's great radio stations, as well as XM Satellite Radio. Another full hour, and you'll hear those calls when we roll on at 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, tonight live from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Live from Grand Rapids, Michigan, this is Bruce Dumont, and we continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, tonight featuring commentary by Rick Albin, veteran political analyst for WOOD radio and television in the area, and also Mark Brewer, who is the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. He's held that position since 1995. He's also the president of the Association of State Democratic Chairmen and a vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Our phone line's open at 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about the significance of the state of Michigan. Again, it will be a pivotal state that will determine who the next president of the United States is going to be. And again, where we do this program from this evening, Grand Rapids, Michigan, is probably at the epicenter of politics in this state, because there's an overwhelming Democratic lead that one would expect coming out of Detroit and the eastern part of this state. And when you get midway through the state, it gets more and more Republican, although, as our Democratic chair points out, Grand Rapids is a Democrat. They even have Democrats that are in the water, swimming in the water here now. So it's not as Republican as it once was, but it's one of the areas of the state that at least can bring a smile occasionally to a Republican, congressional representation in this area. And, of course, the home to Gerald R. Ford, who was not only the former president of the United States, but the House Minority Leader. And, again, if you are someone interested in history, I would strongly recommend the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library. It's a beautiful library, on the river, with magnificent. It's the second presidential library I've had the pleasure of visiting this year. I visited the Reagan Library a little bit earlier in the year, and again, the thing I really enjoyed about it is, you know, in every presidential library, there are things that probably supporters of that president would just as soon have, wrapped up and thrown deep into the bowels of the archives. But some of the not so positive aspects of the Ford administration are there for everyone to read about, make their own interpretation. And there's a replica not only of the Oval Office but the Cabinet Office, where you can go through some of the significant decisions that Gerald Ford had to deal with, including, of course, probably the most devastating part of that administration was the fall of Saigon. And again, it's if you're within the sound of my voice, certainly in Grand Rapids, you have probably been there. But if you're listening on our flagship station at WLS in Chicago, it's about a four-hour drive. And again, it's a beautiful drive. And Grand Rapids is a great town. And again, I think you'd really enjoy a visit to the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library. Let's head to the Deep South. Huntsville, Alabama is the place. Stephen is listening to us on WAPI out of Birmingham. Go ahead, Stephen.
How you doing, Bruce?
Okay, nice to hear from you tonight.
Nice to hear from you. I really enjoy your program, one of the best on. I wanted to just take a quick comment and to your guest there from Michigan. I have visited Michigan several times. It's been many years ago, but it's a beautiful state, and they have a lot to be proud of.
Well, I'm going to spend the rest of the week driving all around it. I'm going to spend all my Illinois money in Michigan going around the loop and heading up to the Upper Peninsula. But go ahead. Now that we've done the travel log, how can we help you politically?
Okay, I wanted to say that I don't feel like I should have to say this, but I will. Being from Alabama and lived here most of my life, I'm in my 60s, I would have no problem whatsoever and voting for an African-American man or female for president if I thought they were the best qualified.
I think what, and I do believe that most all African Americans are going to vote for Obama. Some people might call that racist. I don't. If I were, I can't put myself in their place, but if I could, I might feel the same way. You know, if this is a chance that they've never had before. But what I want to say that I think that is going to hurt Obama more than anything is Congress. And I'm specifically speaking of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker. I mean, she, so I would not vote for Obama, not because of his policies, but I would just be so afraid if there would be no veto power. And she, it's just my opinion, and I'll let other callers talk mm-hmm. about what they want to, but she seems to think that she is queen, and her attitude, and especially, I don't agree with Bush on a lot of things, but her when she starts making it personal, as she did a week or so ago, you know, I just think that's going to be Obama's biggest hurdle.
Stephen, I want to get stay on the line. I want to get our guests to respond to that, and again to put a fine you know pencil to his point, and that is that you know once upon a time the American electorate seemed very comfortable with having Republican presidents and Democratic Congresses. I mean, for a long, long time. So that built-in check and balance provides some level of comfort. Is that a concern that you might have in this particular case, Mark Brewer?
No, a couple of reactions to the caller, and we've got a lot of wonderful folks from Alabama that have moved over to Michigan over the years. The Republicans have tried to use Nancy Pelosi, particularly in some of these special congressional elections over the last few months, and been a dismal failure trying to tie her and use her to try to defeat Democrats in these elections. But I think beyond that, what I would say is, look, the Republicans – under George Bush and with Republican control of the Congress, had 6 years to put their policies in place without Democrats basically having any say in Washington. Let's give the Democrats a chance. You know, give them a chance to control the government and see what their policies are like. And, you know, if people don't like them, they can vote the Democrats out in 2 or 4 years. But Republicans have had 6 years of single-party rule in Washington, and you can see where they've left us. Give the Democrats a shot. Give the Democrats a shot, and we'll see where it takes us.
Rick,
I just quickly looked up some of the approval ratings over the last month, and Congress ranked somewhere between 14% and 23%. But Bruce, you know this as well as anybody. When you ask somebody about Congress, and they say they're throw the bums out, we don't want them. That's everybody except my congressman. So I think when you get down to a individual making a decision, they may not like Congress, but again, it's going to split along party lines as to who they blame for the problems in Congress. And I don't think that you can take on either party, quite frankly. I don't think you're going to be able to say all of these problems belong specifically to this party and these belong specifically to that party, because people will see it through the prism of their own political beliefs, and that's who they will blame.
One of the other things, you know, your preamble, Stephen, I'm very interested in, because I've heard that from a variety of voters, and a question that I would have is that if you disagree with Barack Obama's politics, or in your heart you don't believe that he measures up to John McCain when it comes to experience, is the media, Mark Brewer, because of the nature that they tend to look for things that can maybe sometimes muddy the waters, it seems to me that they frequently gravitate to an issue of race, and they say that people aren't going to vote for Barack Obama because of his race, when there may be some legitimate issues of concern that they really have. That's the question. I want to get your response to that. I want to get your response to that, Rick, as well. And anyone listening, I want to hear your response, because I think the interpretation of that qualification of Barack Obama is going to be one of the key things to watch between now and Election Day. I'm Bruce Dumont, live tonight from Grand Rapids, Michigan, News Radio, Wood 1300. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
A few weird things have happened to me as of late.
What is illusion?
I feel like I'm living in some kind of nightmare.
Somebody was in there.
What is reality?
But they weren't.
If it all sounds a bit crazy.
Everybody looks for an explanation.
I believe I battled death.
Oh, really?
It really weirded me out.
That's because it is. Get crazy with Coast to Coast AM on WOOD.
Hi, Jan Levin here. Some people call me President of Purity Products, and some people call me nuts, because I'm so darn sure you'll feel amazing and have more energy when you try my Omega Berry Fish Oil capsules. I'm giving them away for free. That's right, I've authorized a nationwide giveaway just to prove to you how much better you can feel. Stay tuned and find out how you can get a free bottle after this commercial. It's no secret how important fish oil is for a healthy heart, smooth skin, limber joints, even better focus and concentration. And my Ultra Pure, Ultra Strength Omega Berry Fish Oil has up to 3 times the power of ordinary fish oil. Plus, it's mercury-free. And now I've added blueberry, cranberry, and pomegranate for that extra antioxidant boost as well. Okay, let's give them the number so they can call in for their free bottle.
Feel the difference of Omega Berry Fish Oil. Try it before you buy it. Get your free bottle and also free skin rejuvenating serum by calling 1-800-500-3947. That's 1-800-500-3947. 1-800-500-3947.
Attention, 72nd District voters. This is David A. Elias, the only common sense grassroots candidate on the ballot as a result of knocking on your doors. When the others entered the race, they paid a filing fee. So as I see things, they've got money to burn. Frivolous money spent in a race and no doubt in Lansing. Is that what you want? Compare my common sense proposals and qualifications to all of the candidates. I merely ask you to judge for yourself. DavidAElias.com. That's DavidAElias.com. Paid for by the campaign to elect David A. Elias.
From Dodge, Kansas to Cadillac, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We're going to be back to calls in just a moment. But I did want to ask Mark Brewer and also get Rick's response to the issue that, you know, is out there. It's the issue the media, you know, tends to talk about. It was certainly a focal point of this past campaign week when each side, you know, the issue of race, you know, came into the national discussion. Can you vote against Barack Obama without being perceived as being racist, Mark?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think there are going to be Republicans who are going to vote against him because he's a Democrat. I think we need to have a debate about experience, which I think is vastly overrated. And I'm not so sure John McCain is all that well qualified when it comes to experience. I mean, look, Dick Cheney was the most experienced vice president we've ever had, and I think there's been some disastrous policies that followed. I think more important than that is judgment. And you look back at presidents like Kennedy, who also only served a brief time in the United States Senate before he became president, but exhibited great judgment in dealing with one of the great modern crises we had, the Cuban Missile Crisis. So I think we need to have a debate about this and let Barack Obama, let John McCain lay out their respective characteristics in that regard, but also, too, issues. You know, where are they on various policy issues that are very, very important? So, yes, I think people can vote against Barack Obama without necessarily being racial.
But as the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party, earlier in the primary campaign, when Hillary Clinton questioned whether or not he was ready to be commander-in-chief, when she went after him on a lack of experience, foreign policy experience, when she cringed and criticized him for his suggestion that even with actionable intelligence, maybe there should be military incursion into Pakistan. Again, as a political leader, you know, before you got to the point where obviously you'd like to defend him and you want him to be the president of the United States, did you as a party leader cringe because you knew that she was painting a picture of him that still exists today?
Well, actually, I think that was good to go through that process because Senator Obama knew, and his campaign knew, that they would have to deal with that issue at some point. So if it didn't come up in the primary, it was certainly going to come up in the general.
But quoting Hillary Clinton makes it more difficult for a Democrat, does it not, to sort of dismiss that? I mean,
I think certainly the Republicans are going to try and say, see, this is what Senator Clinton said about Obama, but we can turn around and do the same thing to John McCain. I mean, a lot of the ads he ran this week were criticized by Alex Castellanos. Pat Buchanan even weighed in and said this silly ad with the celebrities in it. So, you know, both parties can do that. But I think the fact that the issue was raised early has actually been a help to Senator Obama because, again, that issue was coming whether he wanted it to or not.
Back to the original question, race will be an issue in this campaign. I can't quantify it. I don't know how big it will be. It won't be the deciding issue, I don't think. But I think that in this country, it would be foolish to say that there won't be some component. I mean, there is obviously in this country still an unsettled atmosphere when it comes to race relations. I don't say that because I believe it. I say it because I think I see it as I observe. But I don't think it'll be the deciding factor. And I appreciate Mark's talk about the primaries. But I think what is more important, I mean, first of all, I think the primary was difficult for Democrats because it went on so long and continued and it took them longer
and
to come up
personal.
With a decision. It did. On the other hand, you have to consider that they were the only game in town for several months because the Republicans were done and Democrats got headlines every day, and there's a certain value to that. More important, what Hillary Clinton said during the primary is what she does in the general election and after the convention. If Hillary Clinton is actively involved, if Bill Clinton is actively involved, if they do it and appear that they want to do it and they enjoy it, that could be a big plus for Democrats. If they go out and look like they're being held at the end of a gun to do some of these events, and or if Bill Clinton isn't engaged in the way that people expect him to be engaged, I think that could be a problem for Democrats.
But when you come back, again, looking at a couple of issues, you obviously have what has been referred to as the Tom Bradley effect, also Harvey Gantt when he was running in North Carolina. And that is the sort of the tradition and the history of polling, and that is when an African American is heading towards an elected position of some significance, either the governor of a major state or a United States Senate seat, even though they may with a week out they may look good in the polls, there is always a significant drop off. And I'm just saying that at this particular time, when you have some polls suggesting that McCain may have gone slightly ahead, and certainly in some battleground states where it appears, as you have said earlier in the program, it's very, very close. I'm wondering, what is the drop-off point there? I mean, are people either lying to pollsters, or when they get into the secrecy of that ballot box, are they going to think twice about Barack Obama and the color of his skin?
The answer to your question will always go unanswered, because if they're lying to pollsters now, they'll lie to pollsters in the exit polls, and we will not know, no matter what the outcome is, we won't know what.
But would you acknowledge, though, I mean, if you were on the inside, if you were in the catbird seat at the Barack Obama campaign, and you were looking at the polls right now in the, not only the national polls, but obviously it's more important to look at the state-by-state polls, and some of the ones that came out today suggest that in Ohio and Pennsylvania and some key states, McCain maybe has taken a slight lead in the wake of all this international publicity. Wouldn't you be worried about that? Wouldn't that be one of the most important things that maybe keeps you awake at night? Just that worry.
What would keep me awake is something you mentioned earlier, and that is the relative closeness of this race right now. Because when you look at the kind of crowds and look at the kind of enthusiasm that we've seen in Michigan and has been seen all over the country, in fact, all over the globe for Barack Obama, it doesn't seem to translate to that vast gap. Doesn't mean it won't, doesn't mean it will. I'm just saying that if I were going to be laying awake at night, I guess I would factor part of that in there because I think it's part of the overall equation. I would be more concerned that I'm not seeing bigger separation in places like Michigan, like Ohio, and in Pennsylvania. And where I would really get concerned is when I come out of Denver after doing what will be another history-making event when he accepts that nomination out at that stadium. If I come out of that 4 days later and I don't see some type of a sizable bump, which we know will come and go, that's when I would really start to get concerned. And the other part of that issue is, what will the McCain forces, what will the Republicans do to counter that? What will they announce on that night that will somehow try to steal the headlines?
Well, a lot of topics being covered here. I would also interject here. I mean, frankly, if you look at the polling data and the research, John McCain's age may be more of a problem than Barack Obama's race. Now, that being said, I don't think either should be a factor in this. But I've got to think, looking at the data, you know, the McCain folks are also worried about that kind of issue as well. But again, that should not be a factor.
Or a growth on the skin.
Yeah.
That look at all the publicity. I mean, he lost his own spin the other day because of a growth on his skin. Let's go to Bob listening to us on WTAG in Worcester, Mass. Nice to hear from Massachusetts tonight. How are things in the Bay State?
It couldn't be better.
Great.
Bruce, I'm really excited to listening to your show now. I've caught on to the program now for over a month, former political science student, and really excited about the comments you're making. The upcoming programs for the Democrats and the Republicans look like the Olympics. So I'm excited looking.
Yeah, it's fun, and again, it's always nice to hear from Massachusetts.
And Rick and Mark, I'm particularly enjoying your political insight and about the issues. I think you're spot on about the issues. Just as a disclaimer, I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, highly educated, underemployed Democrat from a blue-collar city in the central Mass. And I had a couple ideas regarding what the candidates might do restoring health to the economy. I think you're spot on about the jobs. I think you're spot on about, how the energy costs are impacting the economy. But I have something that even more I think as a factor short term regarding individual debt. For example, my biggest individual debt is college loans. And I think investing in the youth is probably the single most important thing that a candidate could do is help support what's going on. In Massachusetts, for example, we just lost $500 million that was formerly raised through the Education Finance Authority got shut off to 40,000 students that are already attending college. They were told 2 days before tuition payments that the loans that they had last year are not going to come forward. So on a short-term basis, any candidate could help support a state. I don't know if it's happening across the country, but in Massachusetts we have a short-term crisis, at least for 40,000 people that have already been good enough to be accepted to college. They're losing financing and may actually have to drop out halfway through their educational program. So one thing is investing in the youth by supporting and offering loans.
Rick Albin's got a comment.
Well, I think that when you talk about what you just mentioned, it sounds, Mark, at least to me, a lot like a story you would have heard right here in Michigan, that people have been very concerned about what is going to happen to the next generation of workers. There are two, I think, very pivotal issues in this election. One, what he just described, what happens to this, and what a great description, an overeducated, underemployed folks. We got a lot of those right here in Michigan, too. Those are people who are going to have to find jobs, but we have a whole bunch of people, and I don't know so much about Massachusetts, but here in Michigan, and one of the real issues is going to be, what do we do for those folks who aren't particularly skilled, about those people who have been making very good jobs, making very good wages for the past 40 years out of high school with nothing more than a high school education and perhaps not even a high school education. We have a lot of people in this state that are my age that have made good livings up until now and now find themselves virtually unemployable. So there are two distinct population groups in this state that are going to be talking about the very same issues that he is, and it's going to be they are going to be looking to these presidential candidates for answers, even understanding that these will not be the final answer.
I think also one of the hot button issues that you're hearing mentioned in the campaigns are the references to green-collar jobs. Certainly Al Gore has made the point that really that building the new green communities and energy and energy efficiency and windmills and all of these alternative fuels, that's where the real growth for jobs exists. Again, I think primarily with the educated sector as opposed to the unskilled, but again, it is a great challenge. Bob, listen, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it, and also your nice words from Worcester, Mass. Tonight, 1-800-723-8289. From Worcester, Mass., we're going to head to Chicago next when we roll on from Grand Rapids, Michigan. From Pullman, Washington, to Boise, Idaho, to Detroit, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Joining us tonight, we have Rick Albin. Rick Albin is a veteran political reporter for WOOD Television and Radio here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's held that position since 1995. He's got his own weekly television show following Meet the Press every Sunday. And again, he is the cat's meow when it comes to politics in the great state of Michigan. And have you ever been called the cat's meow on national radio before?
I've never seen Mark Brewer try so hard not to laugh on nationwide radio either.
Mark Brewer also joins us. He is the vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He is the president of the Association of State Democratic Chairs, and he is the longtime chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. And he is celebrating because of the announcement recently that Barack Obama has agreed that the entire Michigan delegation, 156 Democrats?
158.
158 Democrats. They'll be showing up, and they'll be fully seated in Denver. You got yourself a good hotel, or do they give you a bad hotel?
No, we've got a great hotel.
You got a great hotel.
All around, things worked out
very well. Even with all the problems you've caused, and you still get in a great hotel. But again, we thank you very much for joining us. Started his political career helping David Bonnier get elected back in 1977, a graduate of Harvard and Stanford, and again, Stanford Law, and again, one of the key cogs in the Democratic Party. And we should mention, in case you just tuned in, we did invite the chairman of the Republican Party for the state of Michigan, and also invited the chair of the McCain campaign. But they had other things to do tonight, and opposed to being here, and so we're carrying on without them. And Mark didn't mind showing up and representing the Democratic Party. And again, we thank you very much for doing that. Let's go to Karen, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, I have two questions. If you don't have time for the second one, that's fine. But all right. I wanted you all to kind of pre-associate on the possibility, and if I were betting, this is where I would go, the possibility of McCain and, wait for it, Senator Joe Lieberman as VP. And then if you have time...
Let's let Mark respond to that one, and then we will give you time for question number two.
Well, I think if there's any doubt about Democratic unity this fall, putting Lieberman on the ticket will erase it. That will, I think, cause a great backlash inside the Democratic Party and further solidify Senator Obama's standing in the party. People would be very upset. I mean, for Joe Lieberman, if that happens, and I have great respect for Joe Lieberman, to go from our presidential vice presidential nominee in 2000 to the same position in the other party just 8 years later, I just think it's too much.
Do you, in your heart, do you think it's based on principle? I mean, obviously, he and John McCain have been friends for a long time. There's a similarity in their stance on international affairs. They are both strong supporters of the state of Israel, which is a major concern of Joe Lieberman. Can't that be real? I mean, can't he says that he is rising above partisan politics. Do you buy that, or is it, you know what, the Democrats tried to get me, and I'm going to get them?
Well, I think it certainly could be principled. But, again, I think you've got to look at the bigger picture here in terms of, you know, what the Democratic voters, not only of Connecticut, but of this country and the support they have provided to Joe Lieberman over the years. I mean, I was at that 2000 convention. Couldn't have been prouder.
Yeah, but they tried to throw him out of the United States Senate in a primary, and he beat him.
Well, but again, I think you look at over the course of history in terms of what he's done. He's still caucusing with the Democrats in the Senate. They still have honored his seniority in terms of all things that are done there. I just think that would be a real slap in the face of Democrats were Lieberman to join the ticket.
Rick?
It's not going to happen, but not for those reasons. I mean, first of
He'll be at the he'll have a speaking point at the convention. He won't be able to upstage Zell Miller, though.
If I am Joe Lieberman, I don't feel any allegiance to the Democrats after what happened to him in Connecticut. And by the way, a whole bunch of his colleagues that are Democrats in the United States Senate who wrote big checks to oppose him. I've often wondered how he walks in there and still is able to remain civil, because politics does get personal, and that was pretty personal. But if you have any question about the uncomfortable nature of all of this, if you were watching Meet the Press this morning with John Kerry on one side and Joe Lieberman on the other side, sitting side by side, it was about the most awkward moment in television that I'd seen for a very long time, because both of them were uncomfortable with that situation. I just don't think Lieberman will end up being the guy.
Does, in your view, Rick, one of the sectors of the Democratic constituents that the McCain campaign feel that they can do well with is with Jewish voters? Again, according to some of the polls now, internal polls, the Barack Obama campaign is running behind Kerry and behind Gore insofar as its support within the Jewish community. And obviously the Jewish community is a significant part of the state of Florida, and McCain seems to be doing well there as well. So the strategy of having Lieberman out there at least supportive has been at least somewhat successful.
Sure, but he's also got Charlie Crist, the governor of Florida.
Yes, he does.
But look, Joe gave
him the nomination.
Joe Lieberman is a great asset for John McCain. There's no question about that, and I would take nothing away from that. But John McCain also has a significant problem with his base in the Republican.